Good evening. First, I'd like to tell you a little bit about a forum and maybe set some ground rules for the discussion this evening. A forum differs from a teaching session in that I'll do a brief introduction, make some introductory remarks, and then open it up to discussion. Basically, we found that if you use I statements when we're discussing something that's controversial, it makes it a little easier. So that's, I guess, what I'm asking for our discussion this evening. My name is Jackie Morin, and the topic this evening is the church ready to say no to the nuclear arms race, or are we in a statu confessionis, which is a state of confession about nuclear arms? Some of you may have heard Dan Erlander do his previous session, and he talks about the four basic responses to war and peace held by Lutherans. The first of those is the crusade or the holy war, where we're righteous and there are evil enemies. The second is pacifism, or as Dorothea Zole calls it, it's a neo-orthodoxy. And that's the position that the church really doesn't have to say anything about political or war peace issues, but its realm is the spiritual and salvation. Thirdly, would be the most established position of the Lutheran Church, and that is the just war theory. Jürgen Moltmann lists four basic positions that are included in the just war theory. One is that only legitimate governments can conduct war. Secondly, that it's only used in defense of self or in defense of others. Thirdly, that the goals of war must stand in appropriate relationship to the methods that are used. And fourth, that we keep a distinction between the civilian population and the military. That is the traditional Lutheran stance to war and peace. The fourth position is a position of pacifism, and that's with a CIF, not passivism, that was the second position that I was talking about. And that is the position that says that we are called to love our enemies, and that we do that by absorbing violence and forgiving people. That is probably the most radical stance of the four, and it is within that one that a confession is made. And we are called within that to resist. Another thing that Dorothea Zole, she's a German theologian, said is that justice is the true name of peace. So within confession, we are called then to the deed, or to turn around, to have a change of heart, a metanoia. And that brings us, I guess, to the task of peacemaking, or a positive understanding of peace. So I guess I would like to then open it up, returning to the original question: are we ready to say no to the nuclear arms race, and are we in a state of confession? As a church and as individuals.
I believe it's time to say no to the nuclear arms race as a church and as individuals. But I don't see the church as being ready. I don't see the church as moving towards that. Maybe moving towards it in small ways, but not in the massive with a massive understanding and readiness to take the action I think is necessary in order to put a halt to the arms race.
If you mean saying no, I think the church, I don't think there's any question the church can say no, but it's a question of, well, we say no if the Russians say no, or we say no. I think the question is always, what about the Russians? I think the church says no. It's a matter of, well.
So you're, go ahead. Your no would be conditional.
As part of our confession, we have to say no. But if it means taking an action, saying, coming out in support of the nuclear freeze, I'm not so sure if the church is ready to do that or not. I think it should, but really I don't think the church is there yet as a whole.
Are you saying that the church says no and does yes?
Well, I'm not sure I'm saying that. I think the Lutheran Church doesn't come out and make statements.
It hasn't
had a history of being very vociferous and what is perceived as to most people as political questions. Mm-hmm. And well, we know what happened in the German church in World War II, and I think there should be lessons learned from that, and that the American church, the Lutheran church in America, I mean, Lutherans in America should rise up and take a stand and not sit on the fence.
The LCA is in the process of preparing a statement. This past month, the Lutheran magazine has an article about it. But the other question you raised was the German church. In 1934, which was 50 years ago, the German church, there was a part of the German church that made a declaration in Barmen, Germany. And they said that they were saying no, that the Nazification of the church in Germany was a heresy. And that is where they made their confession. And I'm wondering, one of the questions I want to raise tonight is whether or not the church today is at that point.
What would they say? That, you know, if they were at that point, just out of curiosity, what do you think they would say? Yeah.
What would they say and do if they were at that point? Well, I guess basically, very simply said, if you say yes to Christ, then you have to say no to nuclear arms, to weapons of mass destruction.
And it's hard to think of what a big institution like the church would do, or what kind of actions would they endorse to to give some physical meaning to that.
Yes. Well, I see many options. One is putting your body on the line, which some people have done in protests. Secondly, I think if you look at the question of justice, there's the way we use the money for the military now and positive, peaceful ways that we could use that to feed the hungry of the world. in a number of other ways.
Lobbying.
Yes, yes. Changing the way our tax dollars are spent, or withholding that part of your taxes that goes to the military.
Do you think the church can ever endorse that? I mean, those kind of things, like protests and sort of ethical tax dodging. Or does anyone?
Does anyone else?
I kind of wondered this down here. I'm thinking along the same line, how do you implement this? Are you trying to say that we are weak militarily and we have more of an advocate of peace?
Can you say that again?
If we are weak military, I get it that you're trying to say if we are weak militarily, then we make progress towards peace.
I don't think that's the question. I think the question is what is strength? Is strength arming ourselves with a multi-billion-dollar military budget, which has increased steadily since World War II? Are we any more secure with the so-called strong military? Does a stronger military make us more secure or stronger? And I think that's the question, and I don't think it does make us stronger. I think we're more secure with what some people call a weaker military, but I think actually the military actually would be a lot stronger if nuclear weapons were done away with. And there would be extensive cutbacks on all levels. Because first of all, nuclear war is so unthinkable, but I don't think I don't want to come out and say that I was supporting, you know, the military, but I think our defense, if we're gonna stick to having a military at all, it would be in conventional weapons. And I'm of the personal opinion that war should be done away with, like slavery was, as a means of foreign policy. It just doesn't work anymore. World War II changed everything. The bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki changed everything. And if we think we can conduct foreign policy by waving around nuclear weapons, nuclear weapons changed everything. And we can't use these weapons of terrible destruction with ancient history. I'm really scared.
Are you advocating a unilateral cutback? We cut back, but have no assurance that there'll be any cutback that anyone else will cut back. Are you recommending unilateral cutback?
I would.
On just our part?
You're talking to me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would, because I'm not an expert on, you know, what recent history has been since World War II, but it seems to me, from what I know, that whenever we've made an agreement with the Soviets, okay, we'll not put money into this and we won't develop this, that they'll also stick to that. And I think in order to build up a level of trust, I think unilateral action is what we're called to do.
I'm not sure the evidence supports that they have adhered to those agreements.
The evidence supports it.
Russia observed every single major agreement. So in a sense, it's fair to say that they play pretty fair. But I would like to ask another question raised too. Is, I think that we're going into maybe politics, and I think that we need to establish the church's identity as voice of raising the consciousness and not necessarily being a political power. In other words, well, the church, because most likely and readily we start rhetoric, who is stronger, who is weaker, how we should accomplish that, going into all kinds of detail of things. I think that the primary issue is to establish that the church had a very strong time, for quite a long time, to establish how indeed we say no. In other words, what is our ideological, or put it more clearly, theological basis for making this step? I mean, if we sincerely claim the Lordship of Christ, then we should be as a church, and I'm not saying as a citizen, as a people of the society, there's a different ballgame, but as a church, I think we are definitely obliged, without any hesitancy, saying no to them. I mean, to advocate any form of the war or any form of threat is trying to find a peace and at the same time that the Christ is the Prince of the Peace. I mean, seems to be in a quite ridiculous position, claiming the Lordship and freedom and safety in Christ, and yet at the same time advocating, for some strange reason, as though the end of the time ought to come in the form of the nuclear holocaust, that this is the breaking future to our presence. And a few days ago, I listened to a tape, and I urge you, all of you, to do this excellent tape by Moltmann on the future, and he makes a distinction between a future which, in a sense, originates, a future which originates from our presence, and is a continuum, is the expectation, is a summary of what we've done past and what we're doing in the present time. And there's another form of future, which is, in a sense, coming from the future towards our present presence, and it's Jesus Christ. And if we think in this category, then any notion which some Christians do play with, toy with, that somehow, you know, the end is near, and look for the signs. Russia will come to Israel and we'll have a war. This is absolutely unthinkable for the Christian, because coming up with the parousia, or return of Christ, is beyond any of our own speculation. And our position is to be loyal to Christ and to his commandments, and exactly is to be loyal to maintain the peace, to even in the position of, as a church, indeed, as a church, I'm not saying the military, the Pentagon, but as a church, and you say, yes, we ought to turn our cheek. You know, how we as a church of the United States are constantly supporting the idea of the position of the stronger. And from the technical point of view, it doesn't work. I mean, it didn't work for 30 years, why should it work now? When the United States lost every position, it was involved in from the position of power, so why should we know?
You do. I guess you do raise the question of where we find our security, and whether or not it's idolatrous to put that in nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I think it's most appalling that the newest missiles are being called the peacekeepers. Iranians, if not anything more, to name the weapons of the absolutely total destruction by this name.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny too, because if you think about it, and the situation we're in with the other major nuclear power, Russia, is just like two little kids, really, like two children, trying to decide who's going to back down first. And neither one will, because they're afraid the other one won't. And they're too proud to be the one to do it first. Well, I think America could easily prove that it's a rational nation by just disarming, saying this is a terrible thing. We'll disarm, we don't care what you do, we just don't want to use this thing. You know?
It's
silly.
But I think what's very important, you know, what's very important in the present society is not to jump immediately to the conclusion and say, well, you know, let us recall them or, you know, just cut down. Eventually it should be done because otherwise, you know, most likely in the next 10 years we will blow up ourselves. I mean, you know, from the physical physiology, it will come. I mean, this is pretty certain. But on the other hand, the world is in a position which doesn't know how to react at the present time. In other words, everybody lives on the curse of the present day and the present condition. And no one knows how to make a turnaround. It's exactly the position of the church to raise the voice and bring the eschatological dimension, both East and West, exactly the victims of the society without eschatology. West and East alike are society without eschatology. They cannot project themselves anymore into future.
I don't see a dialogue. I think we have a couple monologues going.
I'm sorry.
I really like to wish that people who think opposite of that would really have a good chance to say their piece.
Are there any other points of view? I know they're there.
What about this? We hear about our young people. They're going against the war. And you know what they're doing in Russia? The young people over there are trained. From the time they're in the eighth grade, they aren't even going to have to go into a camp to learn to fight. We've heard that pretty close. Well, our young people here are trying, they're going against, and over in Russia, Russia is teaching their young people. Mm-hmm. They are carrying arms from the time they're in the eighth grade and up.
Are you saying that makes you fearful that we aren't prepared to meet
yes.
that kind of preparation?
They're going right ahead, and we'll just stop. Mm-hmm. What happened over in the Japan? We didn't start that war.
But the thing is that, just look at World War II. Everyone prepared pretty carefully for that. The fascists did. I don't know that we did. And we didn't lose. We sort of tumbled into World War II.
But we're talking about nuclear weapons, and no matter if you have everybody trained to carry a gun and how to use machinery, that's talking about conventional warfare. But I think the greater threat is a scared official pushing the button, or the neurotic system breaking down somewhere. At least that's where it's at for me.
When we express such certainty that there will be nuclear warfare, aren't we forgetting that God has been in charge in all of human history? And not man.
I think God is in charge, but I also think that there's a place where humans are responsible for what happens. I mean, I think that lets us all off the hook too easily.
I think there ought to be a separation between what the church, from the Christian point of view, what should be said and what should be done, as opposed to what the consequences of that are. Turning the other cheek didn't come from either a position of strength or a position of weakness. It was simply what we should do. And similarly with nuclear weapons, it is wrong. As a church, we should say it's wrong. As a church, we should say, do everything to disarm ourselves. And then we should live in faith from that point, that what happens, happens. That's our that's where our faith in God comes from, or goes to.
I think the thing that realizes that I believe that disarmament, it does involve some risk. If we did froze or disarmed, I think that's kind of risky. But I think it's risky the way we are now, too. I think I have to try and look at what's my response to the gospel. And that's...
I thought our church bodies did have a proclamation on the, on this nuclear thing, or haven't they made that? I thought they had, on our, of our stand on the nuclear warfare.
I think the LCA is in the process of doing one. I don't think it's been adopted yet, and I'm not sure about the other.
No, the ALC adopted a statement at their last convention.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. There is a something along this line that they are working on.
The ALC, I think, took a fairly strong stand on the nuclear issue. Came up for in my right the. Statement included in favor of the nuclear freeze. The statement that the LCA is proposing for its convention this summer, is it okay if I just sure? Basically says this, that the nuclear arms race is evil. But then it says it presently is what maintains, in a way, a form of peace. In other words, the Soviet Union and the United States aren't fighting directly because there is nuclear deterrence. But to threaten mass annihilation is evil. And yet, during an interim period, the statement says it is a lesser of two evils. The proposed statement doesn't say what the greater of the evils is. It says it's a lesser of evils, and during an interim period when the Soviet Union and the United States would work on a better form of security, nuclear deterrence is necessary during this interim period. Of course, then it doesn't say how long this interim period would last. Either, but that's it does make some very strong statements against nuclear deterrence, but then comes out and says it is the lesser of two evils at the present time. That's the statement that's being proposed to the LCA convention this summer.
Well, I have quite a bit of confidence in all our church leaders from all our church groups that they advise their people of the proper attitude towards nuclear warfare. I feel confident for that.
So you would support whatever the church body would say?
I would.
Mm-hmm. I think we have more than Russia, the United States, to worry about and be concerned, and they don't have a strong religious background. Even a weaker Christian background than either Russia or the United States. And they are already have the nuclear power, so I don't know why we stress strongly the United States and Russia. They're at least talking and weighing the balance and educating their people, but these other countries are not educating them again, or, you know, they're educating them for the use of it, not for the non-use. And they're ignorant. Their military is ignorant on the total destruction of what they're going into. And I think the Russian military and the United States military are more educated. By the way, I had a couple of sons in the service and in Vietnam. And their stories are quite different from the good that we talk about when they come back, the innocent people.
The innocent people that are killed?
Well, like in Vietnam, those people weren't for all of these other countries coming in there and dividing them up. And totally ignorant of what's going on in their nation. Now, we're not in that status, but there's other countries like Khomeini and all of those. I think they're more dangerous in Russia than the United States. We at least are arguing. Keeping track of each other.
I think there's a strength in nuclear power. During World War II, we came from practically nothing. We had nothing to really start out with, but our factories were so good, and we were not being bothered by bombs or anything like that, and so we were able to produce enough to overcome the Nazis. Our power was in strength in being able to build things. This is not something that we can do now, because nuclear power is so fast that you're not going to have the time. And if the Russians have zeroed in on certain areas, they're not going to zero in on something that's not going to do anything. They're going to be zeroing in on the factory areas that they know are going to be used for implementation in nuclear manufacturing. That's my opinion, is that we should continue to have a strong defense. I wouldn't like to have a nuclear war. I saw Hiroshima, I saw Nagasaki 4 days after they were bombed when I was over there. I don't like it. I think it's terrible. And the people who were there, we had Christian missionaries, not Christian missionaries, but Japanese Christians who came down to Fukuoka, Japan when I was there, mm-hmm. and talked to us about what took place in their particular areas. And it wasn't pleasant at all. It was terrible. And that's the reason that I say that, in my opinion, we should have a strong background in our country. We can talk all we want, but the Russians, to my way of thinking, haven't really adhered to everything that they have said that they were going to do. We talked about, somebody said something about slavery. We've done away with slavery. We haven't done away with slavery. They've still got it in Russia, as far as I know, out in the salt mines. What do they do with their people? What did Stalin do? How many killings did he make? Stalin's not here any longer, but the people are, and the people are not the ones that are really making the rules. It's the political men that are doing the thing.
You raise an interesting issue, though, when you talk about defense. I think defense with nuclear arms isn't a reality, particularly with the weapons we're preparing now, the first strike weapons. And so it's not really a question of defending or defense, but the capability is to annihilate before there's a chance for anyone to defend anything.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that the timing is what we have now. It's so quick. You're not going to have time to do anything if you don't have a good defense of your own country. If you can't react quickly, you don't have anything.
We can't. I don't think we can react quickly enough. What I think Jackie's trying to say is the weapons we have now, like the Trident submarine and the MX, those are first strike weapons. We would fire those first. We would be the aggressor. And that is the purpose of those weapons.
Well, it depends upon who pushes the button first.
The thing that bothers me is that the only country that has used these bombs is America. And I wonder if the Russians don't sit there and say, well, they've used them, what is to prevent them from ever using them again? And if America is going to do anything, it'll have to be to give assurance that we would never use them. And that's a crucial issue. And can the church do anything in its position to help America to take that kind of a stand?
That's a great question. Is there any response to that question?
I think the Soviet Union even has come out, has said that they will not be the first to use, they will not have a first strike, or they will not be the aggressor with nuclear weapons, haven't they?
But isn't the thing that we're afraid of is that what if somebody gets the idea that the Americans have pushed the button?
That's right. That's
and
exactly.
We haven't, but we get the idea that they have, and then Russia will go to work and push their button.
I think it's important to always try to put ourselves in their shoes, not just the leader's shoes, but also the people's shoes, and what they've lived through. They suffered terrible losses on their soil during World War II. And the Americans aren't, besides the refugees that we have taken in this country, we haven't ever suffered a terrible war on our soil since the Civil War. And something to be kept in mind.
There was a comment over here. No?
I need some clarity on this man's issue. I can't tell if you're saying in order to prevent the Russians from pushing the button for us to totally disarm nuclear so that we don't have a button to push first, or for us to build up more. I'm not clear as to what your point was about that.
Well, that's the thing we're afraid of, is that who knows when the button's going to be pushed, see? And we hear about some mistakes being made, even in our United States, that it almost happened that some of these warheads got going here in America.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying we should disarm nuclearly so that takes away that side of it, so we can't make that mistake?
Maybe we need to go back to the Old Testament and learn a lesson. And that is when Israel put their trust in God and not in their own weapons, they went ahead. They had success. But when they went ahead by their own power, their own armies, they lost. And maybe we better start as the Christian people putting more trust in God to control all things, even the accident that might happen.
I think there's a fine line, and the woman here raised it earlier too, about God being the God of history and taking care of things. That came up this week when we were talking about the Holocaust with the Jews, and how many Jews are now today saying, is God a God of history? Can we even say that anymore when our people have been destroyed? Now, I want to agree with what you say, that we need to put less faith in our own notions of our own strength and more in what God's strength can be. But I think there's some real fine lines between, that can cut both ways. You can say give it over to God, and that can also say, therefore let our leaders keep doing what they're doing in terms of spending tax dollars to build up more military, and I'm not so sure that's the best way to have trust in God, that He'll take care of that too.
I think it's just safer to be ready to go if something happens.
To be ready to die?
Yes.
Along that line, I think the end thing is what's said, I think, this morning, that who's the winner? If you're a Christian, who's the winner?
Is there a winner?
Christ.
Yes.
Told us that we would be winners, wouldn't he? Didn't he?
First, I need to know what you mean by winner.
Winner? Oh. Who's going to heaven? A non-believer or the believer?
And then the other question is how about the Russian Christians? Yeah.
I guess I kind of enjoy living on the earth, so right now, and I kind of like to see my children, perhaps if I have children, be able to have that experience. So I guess for myself, it's hard for me to say, well, I'll just be ready so that I'm ready when I, you know, when it happens that I'm ready to die and, you know, it could happen today. I guess I kind of like fear.
Yeah, it seems to me Christ said that he came to bring us life, abundant life. One of the other things, I keep referring to Dorothea Zolle, she's a German theologian, but one of the other things that she said about nuclear weapons is that it really does show a primary fascination with death. I mean, I guess I would reaffirm what Jesse is saying, that I do want to live.
That maybe if we don't speak out against the use of our tax dollars, we're murdering just as surely as, I mean, if we don't say no, then we're... part of it may not do any good to say no, but not to say no makes us a part of it.
Back in World War I, it was used made of gas warfare and also germ warfare. Mm-hmm. There has been an international agreement or peace, of maybe it's even gone that far, not to use that type of warfare anymore. And I think in Congress not long ago, we took one step in the good direction. There was no money appropriated for the development of that kind of warfare. Although Russia is being accused of using gas down in Pakistan.
Afghanistan.
Okay. So can that possibly happen as far as the nuclear is concerned? That we have them but we'll not use them. Can there be that kind of gentleman's agreement brought about because we as Christians have prayed and God has been able to influence the leadership of our nations? I think we need to be in prayer for the people who are chosen to serve in government both here and in other countries, even in Russia.
I would agree with you that I think prayer is part of peacemaking, but I'm not sure about the point of having the weapons.
If we can get rid of them, fine. But I don't know, I can't quite see that we're going to agree to. Can we pull them back a little bit? But can we pull them back completely? There doesn't need to even to be that kind of thinking.
Are there any other responses? Do you think it's possible?
Well, I don't know. I think we need to elect leaders that will develop a lot better communications with foreign countries. I don't think our present leader has done a very good job communicating with Russia. I mean, the Olympics is an example of, I mean, we were the first to pull out. Now they're retaliating. See what you got.
Well, that wasn't this president, though. That was the previous administration. And another thing about the, and I'm not saying anything against what you're saying, but in the previous administration, when I was in the service at that particular time, and there was a problem with maintenance in the military, a lot of things were just downgraded. And I think that at that particular time, we were losing out. We were not gaining anything in our defense, in our buildup of our defense. So now we have a problem of a lot more money being expended at one time in order to bring it up to a level that is, well, not adequate, but equal perhaps to the Russians. Now, they've obviously got more according to reports I've seen, they've got more submarines than we've got.
But our submarines...
I feel sorry for our nation, but I also feel sorry for the whole world. Because somebody somewhere or some power has convinced us that the only form of defense is brute power. I don't believe that. The ability to try and try and try, and that's what our Lutheran Church stands through the confessions in the justifiable war, when it calls war as a very, 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 very last resort, has always assumed that the best defense is the deep and committed endeavor to use what we have learned from Jesus to try and try and try to get along with people and to practice justice in this world, that there not be millions of hungry people that are angry. To care about that is defense. And I'm curious where or who convinced us that the only power really that defends us is military weapons. That, as far as I understand, the Bible is clear about that as not being the place for our security. And I think the United States believes this. I think the Soviet Union believes it. It's almost an idea that's spreading all over the world to almost every nation. And in the name of Jesus, are we ready to call that to question? That's where my mind is thinking. I wanted to share that.
Okay. I believe even for those who don't share that belief, that I see a great misunderstanding in our society about how radical a nuclear freeze is. I mean, here we are, we're talking about reducing our overkill, not our defense. Which is, we're talking about excess. It's our degree of excess. Now, even if you're talking in just purely political terms, and then once you bring the Christianity into it, then it becomes even clearer, to my viewpoint, that there's no reason for us to be able to kill everyone on the earth three times.
I have a terrible fear or an idea that once in a while when you hear about an accidental near firing of a missile or something, that a foreign country of some kind could let loose a weapon which we would not know where it was coming from. This could be all by accident, and what would we do if a city was hit accidentally by we knew not who?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's a terrible thought.
Yeah, I think that is a danger.
I was just wondering, a woman made the comment, tell me if I'm talking too much, about she was ready to die, or we should be ready to die. And I think, yes, we should be ready to die, and accepting that what we're living under is unacceptable, and it's not leave, and accept that, yes, we could die. But then, I think that frees us to act out of in faith, to do something different. That puts everything in a fresh perspective. I think the gospel puts things in a fresh perspective to do something different. And I was just wondering, my gosh, I'm 25 years old, and I know nothing about the Soviet Union. From my education, I'm in my second year of seminary, and anything I know about the Soviet Union is what people's told me or read about in the newspaper. I don't know the names of five cities in the Soviet Union. Because at the time I was born, I guess, the Soviet Union was already America's enemy, was America's enemy. We're in the middle of the Cold War.
1958, and I was just wondering, all this money that's being spent on defense, what would happen if we bought every family in the Soviet Union an American car? Wouldn't we have a lot of friends in the community? See an oil shortage.
What would the Soviet propaganda say? They wouldn't give America credit for buying those cars, would they?
Well, I mean, they're just the American people. What can they say?
I don't think they would ever give us credit for giving anything to them. Their stories always come out pretty different as they want it to come out.
I'm just concerned that we need to keep friendship channels open. And maybe that might be the role or our call as a church to do, is to adopt each other, adopt Christian congregations in the Soviet Union as fellow brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ.
You raise another issue, I think, and that is about converting all of the war-making industries into peaceful industries and what that would do.
You had some reference there to taxes, but mm-hmm. I guess that thing that kind of bothers me a little bit is no matter how much we dislike our money going into defenses or whatever, or military, wherever you want to put it. Now, when I pay my taxes, how do I keep that portion of my taxes out, and will I accomplish anything sitting in jail if I hold it up?
Or be killed by going to crawl.
What will it accomplish?
Is it the right thing to do?
Well, that's what I'm asking. Should I hold my taxes back?
I guess that's
sure
a...
Sure, I was both paying my taxes.
That's a decision that you have to make. I mean, that...
Oh, no, but you got in these church decisions here that we're talking about.
I said it was one possibility of a way to resist.
Yeah, so now my question is that a legitimate question?
Christ said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and unto God that which is God's. And his mother and dad went to pay their taxes. And that they weren't in, well, their times were upheaval too, but they still dutifully paid their taxes for their government to progress or proceed the best they could. And how can our government do anything if we all start back?
But we're just talking about that percentage of the taxes that goes to military spending.
I don't think the church, I think you're asking if the church has spoken on that, and I don't think it has specifically spoken on that at all.
But it would have to be all churches.
The thinking is there to push them into that thinking.
The Lutheran Church has sent out our organizations within the Lutheran Church, I should say, has sent out pamphlets and things on how to assist people who are resisting their tax payments.
Elmer, did you have something to say?
Yeah, I like the quote. It's coming from Jesus. I was hoping we'd get there. The same one who said, render to Caesar, said, turn your cheek, and meant it. Said, love your enemy, and meant it. And said, forgive those who wrong you time after time after time, and meant it. It seems to me if we're called to accept that we render to Caesar what Caesar's, then we're equally called by that same argument to love and not kill our enemy.
Do you think our boys wanted to be killed in Pearl Harbor?
We didn't start that.
My question is only what Jesus Christ says. Are we willing to pay the price of following Jesus Christ?
Well, then you get back to Isaac, you've got to be ready to go. That's your going to pay the price.
And then we better pray till we go.
No, that's not enough to follow Jesus Christ to be ready to go. That's a wrong answer. I believe that's wrong. That means that I have to act as Jesus Christ acted. He was ready to go, but he didn't take it that way. He acted. And so we would have to be, he accused me, the answer is to be ready to go, whether or not there's armament or not, but to act as Jesus Christ acted. And that means to love our enemies. It means to turn the cheek. That needs to forgive. Those are all actions.
I think being ready to accept heaven, also, maybe on the other side of that coin, denies that we're in the kingdom of God right now. And I think we have to face that, that Christ left us the kingdom of God in our hands when he left. And out of the sense of stewardship to this world, we should be called not only to give money, but to work for the environment and to work against annihilation of populations and all of that. That should all be encompassed in our sense of stewardship.
So you're talking about other positive ways of making peace.
Well, in that way that we, you know, put some of our resources into feeding the starving in Ethiopia. You know, as they said, we could wipe out hunger in some amounts that we use for it.
Yes.
Yeah. It seems like then we're saying if we're ready to go with the weapons, are we also ready to go without them? I think that's a fair question for us to ask, because we...
I think that we should ask that question, because if we're willing to die for peace, at least we're witnessing to something. And if we trust in weapons, it's sort of a contradiction of our faith. And what kind of faith do we have if we say, yes, we really do believe in Jesus, but those Russians have those weapons and we better have them as well. So that if we really have complete faith, we have to take this tremendous leap and say that we'll put our trust in Jesus and trust that it will come out all right. And if we die, at least we're making a statement. If we die with weapons, we're the same as our enemy. We haven't made any statement at all. We're all the same. But if we die for our faith, I think it will change our enemy much, much more than it would ever do if we face them with weapons.
It seems to me that if all the energy I see and hear in the last 4 or 5 years about a nuclear freeze, the protesting I see around the world, it seems like we tend to bypass the real central issue. You know, all these different actions we can do or getting up in that. And just as I just heard it, if we look and see what Christ said, it seems to me that Christ's priority was prayer. You know, whenever I see Christ, I see him on his knees praying. I see him asking his Father for guidance. I see him weeping. I see him crying. And I think somewhere along the line, we have lost the real worth and the value of prayer. We talk about it. I've talked to a lot of people and heard a lot of miraculous things that have happened as a result of prayer. And yet the one thing that seems to be the biggest blight upon the world right now, this nuclear possibility of a Holocaust, I don't hear a whole lot. I hear a lot of lip service, but I don't see a lot of people going down to their knees in our churches. I don't see a lot of our services being geared to prayer for peace, prayer for guidance, and sacrificing. And I have 2 little children, and my responsibility is not to set up a world that they can walk into freed and happy and joyful. I'm a Christian, and so I accept the fact that my responsibility as a Christian is to prepare my children to suffer as Christians. I'm not preparing a world for them to walk with the deer and to pet the little goats and to look. I'm preparing them to come out and do one thing. How can they reach the most people to spread the message of God? And to do that means that they're going to have to suffer. And I don't like to see them suffer, but that's the reality of it. Now, to be spit upon, to be laughed at, to be joked at, to go out in the world and take the risk to spread the word of Christ. And to do that, they need prayer. We've seen our church begin to get little prayer groups together specifically for nuclear freeze, and see two or three people show up. And yet see a meeting gathering to, you know, unilateral freeze, and there's 100 people there. I just wonder where the priority is. You know, if we really believe that prayer has the power to change, if two or three gather in my name and ask my Father, he will do it, then it's about time we start actually implementing that. You know, if all the energy that we put out into so many different ways of actions and saving taxes, for how long, if it takes an hour to fill out a tax and save $50, bring it back, how much more power is 50 minutes of prayer? I just wonder where the attitude has to be changed. It's nice to say we can change the military hardware into peaceful uses. You don't change the attitude, which is the basis of it, the guts of it. All the superficial surface changes aren't going to do a thing. And the attitude's changed through prayer.
I'm wondering if it's an either-or sort of thing, whether prayer can't be superficial or whether actions can't be have depth, or vice versa, as you're saying.
I think actions are human power. Prayer is God's power.
Reminds, like, one thing I appreciate you saying, it reminds me of a lecture Walt Volman gave here once on prayer. It's called Prayer in the Name of Jesus. And to pray in the name of Jesus is to put my life into the life of Jesus. And close to what Elmer said about into the life of turning the other cheek, loving the enemy, into the life of love. And I guess I agree, if millions of people were praying in this way, then I think it'd be a powerful movement towards peace. You know, but I guess I'd have to see, is that kind of prayer really embodying myself in Christ and the Christ way and the Christ vision and Christ kingdom? If every church group was doing that, I can say, wow.
Well, you look at the newspaper, and what do you see? You see a bunch of stuff on the front page, and a little article in the bottom of some very back page or in the middle someplace where you don't see it, of what people are doing for the good. But the rest of it, it seems like they are promoting, they're promoting this thing that we're talking about tonight. And I think that the news is horrible. I stood up I was eating at a restaurant that the government had in Saigon, and one of the fellows says, "Look outside," and right in the center of the city, they had a theater, and on the steps of the theater, the television crews were out there, and they were getting the young people of the Vietnamese young people out there with signs, you know, Johnson is the killer and all this sort of thing, and they promoted this sort of thing, and I couldn't believe it, and they were down there just shooting these pictures, and I suppose that here at home is what we saw, what the people saw, and this is the news to me is terrible. Yeah, and they did pay the kids to do this. One night I was in my own hotel room, and most of us, a lot of us lived in town, in Saigon, and they had about 2,000 people, young kids, come down the street, and everything was against the Americans. That why were we there?
I guess I would like to give people the chance to leave if they would like to do that now. We've been going for about an hour.